from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working with students and families to improve college access and student success for a better West Virginia.
Good evening, I'm Andrea Lanham, and this is the Legislature Today from the Capitol Building in Charleston. Tonight, we'll hear from the director of WVU's Bureau of Business and Economic Research, who says while there is optimism about West Virginia's economic forecast, there should also be a sense of urgency. One of the issues we'll discuss is the need for investment in human capital, and that's the objective of Senate Bill 284, according to supporters. The bill would provide a grant program for students attending West Virginia's community and technical colleges. Senator Craig Blair spoke passionately in favor of the bill on the Senate floor this morning.
One of the things that we're trying to do in this building is to create jobs, opportunity, hope, and the ability to raise your family in West Virginia. This piece of legislation does just that in a minimum amount of money. It's $7 million and it's last dollar in. It's a phenomenal piece of legislation, and I can tell you it's going to have ripple effects, and it allows the need to be there for those that are truly in need and when they are truly in need. Nothing could be better.
It was Higher Education Day today at the Capitol, and some four-year private college representatives took the opportunity to express concern about Senate Bill 284. They believe they should have a seat at the table when discussing a grant program for two-year technical degrees.
Well, we're not against it, but what we want to make sure is, number one, we study it, and number two, that many of us have two-year programs. And we're not talking about private higher education students getting this deal, but just the public institutions. And we think that that ought to be studied and incorporated as the law continues its evolution. We're not opposed to it. As a matter of fact, it's very creative. But we think that we need to be included in the conversation, number one, and number two, with our students.
Joining me now is Dr. John Deskins, director of WVU's Bureau of Business and Economic Research, to talk about our economy, the hits it's taken, the challenges we have, and the investments we need to make for the returns for that we desire. Director Deskins, thank you so much for joining me today. So we heard that there may be some disagreements for community and technical colleges, but from your perspective, there's no question that investing in human capital is absolutely what West Virginia needs to do.
No question about that. The key point is that we have to make our state attractive to potential businesses to draw, you know, new businesses here. And in order to do that, we have to convince them that they can find the workers in West Virginia that they need, who are educated, healthy, and drug-free, and doing whatever we can to help create a more educated population to draw those businesses in is really a vital component of economic development.
So we've asked you to join us to provide us a picture of our economy, the hits it's taken, the challenges that we face, and where would be a good investment for West Virginia. But before we get into the numbers, talk about the value of decisions based on data rather than politics, misinformation, or out-of-date information. I know your mission is to inform based on scientific research.
Sure, that's my whole mission. I mean, we have very important questions before us, right? I mean, how to devote the state's scarce resources. So we can't just go based on anecdotal accounts or based on somebody's intuition. I mean, it's imperative that we research and look at the numbers, and we're very objective and analytical in deciding how to allocate the state's scarce resources. So, you know, we here at WVU are committed to helping with that to a large extent, and I think it should be a key driving principle across the state to be very rigorous about analyzing economic development issues before us.
And as I said at the top of the program, we can feel optimistic, but actions need to be taken right away.
Sure. Well, we really have a mixed bag in some sense. I mean, we're doing much better than we were a year or 2 years ago, so we're moving in the right direction. We're seeing growth. We have lots of reasons for optimism. But at the same time, we still have a lot of challenges before us. We'll talk about some of those challenges in just a minute. So it's really glass half full, glass half empty. We're doing better. We have some optimism, but we have a lot of challenges, and we shouldn't give up on this sense of urgency to make the changes today to help promote prosperity in West Virginia 5, 10, 20 years from now.
Let's go ahead and get and launch into the graphics that you brought. There's lots of good data here. The first one is an overview of what happened to our jobs.
Sure, you can see, you can see that West Virginia suffered, tremendously. We had our employment peak in 2012, and between 2012 up through around the middle of 2016, our state lost about 26,000 jobs. So, 4 years or so of really tough economic environment in the state. But the good news is, around the middle to the later part of 2016, we've turned the corner and we've started adding jobs again. Since the middle of 2016, West Virginia has added back about 4,500 jobs. So we're down 26,000, but now we're back up 4,500. So moving in the right direction. But honestly, we forecast that we're going to see a rate of growth in employment over the coming 5 years that's probably a little bit slower than what we would hope for. We think that it's probably going to take until about 2021 to get back to that 2012 level of employment. So it's still going to take a while for us to come out of this hole. And so that kind of feeds into the sense of urgency, because we're not growing as rapidly as we would hope. We still have to continue making positive changes, pushing forward to make our state more attractive to potential businesses.
I know you had said before too that one of the good news, I guess, was that we had hit rock bottom and now we're bouncing back up.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, we were asking ourselves year after year, have we hit bottom? Have we hit bottom? Have we hit bottom? When are we going to start growing again? And, now we're a year and a half into it. We have, a real sense of confidence that we did hit bottom and that we are moving in the right direction. There's not really any question about that anymore. The question now is only over how fast is the growth.
Lots of focus on oil and natural gas at the legislature this session. Let's take a look at how they've been doing compared to our coal industry.
Well, just first and foremost, coal is, of course, the biggest driver behind the losses that we've seen. Coal production fell from 158 million tons down to the low 80 million range, so a drop of nearly 50% in coal production. But if you go back to the later part of 2016, coal started to turn around, and coal jumped up about 10 million tons between 2016 and 2017. So coal has certainly improved, but coal is still well below where it was, where what was considered to be normal a decade ago. But natural gas has been the opposite. Natural gas really boomed in West Virginia for 4 years in a row. We saw growth in natural gas production of more than 35% per year for 4 years in a row. But then, as you can see in the figure, we saw about a year and a half of flatness in natural gas. It's very understandable why that flatness happened, but that has also come to an end, and natural gas production has started growing again as well. So both parts of our state's energy economy are moving in the right direction. Coal picked up, coal jumped 10 million tons, and natural gas production has started growing again, and we expect continued healthy growth in gas production for some time.
We move on now to discuss West Virginia's gross domestic product. Can you explain what that is and how we're doing?
Well, GDP is their biggest number. It's going to be the first number that you learn in Economics 101. It measures the total market value of all the stuff that we produce. Total GDP in West Virginia is about $75 billion, by the way. That's the total market value of everything that we produce in a year. But if you look at this figure, GDP in West Virginia was flat from 2010 up through 2016. We saw 5-6 years where we didn't really see any growth in GDP. That's remarkable. GDP for 2017 is looking much better, and we're certainly moving in the positive direction in terms of this big economic indicator for the last year. So that's a definite reason for optimism. But if you look at the figure as well, the green line shows you GDP for all industrial sectors in West Virginia except energy. You would think the green line would look better than the blue line because, coal didn't weigh down the green line. But oddly enough, the green line actually looks worse. The takeaway here is that, the problems in West Virginia were kind of driven by coal. Coal lost, over 45% of production because of big international, international trends that were well beyond our control. But the problem is is the loss in coal combined with the fact that we don't have other sectors of our economy that are growing to offset the losses in coal. My point is, we desperately need industrial diversification. It's clear in these GDP numbers, it's clear that we just don't have those other sectors that are growing at a healthy, robust pace to offset the losses in coal. So a key guiding principle for legislators, for any business or community leader in West Virginia needs to be, you know, what can we do to promote industrial diversification in West Virginia? We want to keep energy. We don't want to get rid of energy and replace it with something else. We want energy to be strong, but we have to get strength in other sectors as well to have a more balanced economic portfolio.
Now in this next graphic, we see how we've become more dependent on transfer payments. I believe we are the most dependent on the federal government among all the states. Explain what transfer payments are and why that doesn't bode well for our economic situation.
Right. The yellow line shows you the growth in per capita personal income that we expect. And the growth in total income in the state is going to be roughly on par with the national figure, a little bit lower than the national figure. But if you look at the other components, you see that transfer income is growing much more rapidly than overall income, and wage and salary income and proprietor's income are growing more slowly. So transfer payments, we're saying, are Social Security retirement benefits, Social Security unemployment benefits, disability benefits, welfare benefits, those transfers from Washington. It's good that those are there. Those are very helpful. Those really provide a very, very important, valuable safety net for people in need. But the fact that we're relying more and more and more on transfer income, and the fact that we're relying less on wage and salary income and small business income, it just doesn't bode well for our economic growth potential. It's good that the transfers are there, but an increased reliance does not bode well for our potential growth over the long term.
And you said the salary income and small business income is growing less rapidly.
Right. Those were the two bottom bars in the figure. Again, transfer income is by far the most rapidly growing component of income in West Virginia. Wage and salary income, small business income growing much less rapidly, implying that we're becoming more and more dependent on transfers.
So why is that exactly? What's the big driver behind that?
Well, we're going to get to that in just a second. I mean, part of it is the fact that we have a historically low rate of labor force participation. Part of it is because we are an older state. We're one of the oldest states in the country, so we have a lot of retirees. We also have by far the highest rate of disability in the country. We're substantially above the state with the second highest rate of disability. Older population, high rate of disability, lots of folks who are on some other form of welfare because we're a relatively low-income state and we have several other challenges before us. It's kind of it's reflective of a lot of demographic and socioeconomic characteristics and challenges that we have.
So let's talk about labor force participation. I know in our discussions before you had talked about how unemployment isn't necessarily the best number to look at for West Virginia.
Right. So the real key statistic for West Virginia is the labor force participation rate. This statistic captures the share of the adult population that wants to work. Whether they actually have a job or whether they're just looking for a job, it captures the share of the adult population that wants to work in the first place. It's a more fundamental descriptor of your labor force, of your labor market, compared to the unemployment rate. But as you see in the figure, West Virginia is dead last among the 50 states in terms of labor force participation. The national figure is 63%. It's never going to be 100% because you have people who are retired or people who are in school, people who are stay-at-home mom or stay-at-home dad. There are some fine reasons not to be in the labor force, but West Virginia is 10 points behind the national average, dead last among the 50 states. And the gap is what I worry about, the 10-point deficit that we have. Our deficit is driven by human capital issues. We have people who don't have a good education or they don't have good training. So they know they're not going to get hired if they look for work because of that educational deficit. So they don't even bother to look for work in the first place. It's because of people who would like to work in an ideal world, but they're unhealthy, right? West Virginia leads the nation in terms of, you know, diabetes, cancer, obesity, smoking, lack of exercise. So it's driven by people who are unhealthy. They'd like to work in a perfect world, but they're too unhealthy to work, so they can't get into the labor force. And it's also driven by the opioid crisis that has really exploded in West Virginia, people who just can't look for work because they have tragically become addicted to drugs. So this labor force participation rate, the thing is, we are never going to achieve economic outcomes that that are as great as we would hope that they would be. We're never going to achieve an income that's on par with the national average if we have the lowest rate of labor force participation in the country, right? This is a key issue. This is a vital issue. We have to focus on getting more and more and more of our workforce, of our population into the workforce. That means investing in education outcomes, improving education, improving people with 4 years degrees, improving technical and community college programs as well to have more of those, improving health outcomes, fighting this drug abuse epidemic. All those issues are wrapped up in this labor force participation rate, and it's an absolute key principle behind making our state more attractive to potential businesses and getting us to the level of prosperity we ultimately hope for.
And the way I understand it, too, is labor force participation has been a longstanding problem in West Virginia.
Oh, boy. This is sad. We have had the lowest rate of labor force participation every year since 1976. It is a longstanding problem. Some of it's a cultural issue, perhaps. It's a hard problem to overcome, but it's a problem that desperately needs to be addressed if West Virginia is ever going to be kind of at the national average in terms of income or other economic outcome measures.
So next we look at state government spending as a share of total state and local spending. What's the takeaway here?
Well, a point that I've been making lately is West Virginia is a relatively centrally structured state. Just this statistic, it captures, how big is the state government compared to state and local governments combined in that state. In West Virginia, we're pretty far on the one end of the spectrum there, meaning that our state government does relatively more and our local governments do relatively less compared to the overall national average. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I suspect that we have this because this is the way it was decades and decades ago. I don't know that we have been intentional about having a relatively centrally structured state where the local governments have less responsibility. I do know that West Virginia has vast differences across its regions in terms of economic strengths and weaknesses and challenges and opportunities. What we need in the Eastern Panhandle is very different than what we need in the state's southwestern coalfields region. So, maybe the fact that we have such vast regional differences means that we should enable local governments to have more power to be able to tailor economic development strategies appropriately for their region, since their regions are so different. I'm not for sure about that, but I think this is a very important question, a very important hypothesis that needs to be addressed, and it's something that we really need to be deliberate about rather than just accepting a more centrally structured government just because of historic accident. It's just something we need to research and understand and be deliberate about.
This next slide is really shocking. Small business births and deaths, practically nothing but red for the last decade.
Well, in the figure, the blue line shows births and the red line shows deaths. And so I have periods of net growth highlighted in blue, periods of net decline where deaths are greater than births highlighted in red. And of course, you do see way too much red and not enough blue. The background behind this slide, though, is, entrepreneurship is really vital, right? We are focused on diversifying our economy. I said earlier that one of our, key points of focus on economic development needs to be diversifying our economy. And how do you do that? How do you diversify an economy? You don't want government leaders just to pick industries A and B and reject industries C and D. The way to achieve diversification is to let entrepreneurs do it. Entrepreneurs will experiment and they'll find what industries work for economic circumstances and they'll find what industries don't work for our economic environment. So really, the key behind diversifying economy and long-run growth and innovation is entrepreneurship. So we have to do everything we possibly can do within reason to create an economic environment, to create a culture, to create a policy environment that's conducive to small business startup and growth. It's very, very, very important that we have a policy environment, a business environment, just an overall picture in the state that encourages people to start new businesses and supports those businesses and encourages them to grow. That's how we'll achieve diversification. And that's how we'll find what industries really work for our specific economic characteristics in this region or that region of the state. And this figure, of course, shows you how we've been doing in terms of small business births and deaths. We haven't been doing that well, but that's correlated with a weak economy in general that we've seen in recent years. But there is a little bit of good news to take away from the figure. We do see that small business births have picked up in recent years, and we have reason to be hopeful that as the economy continues to improve, that will reduce the deaths number. So hopefully when new data come out in a year or in 2 years, we'll see that we're back in the positive territory and that we actually are doing more to support small businesses.
So now we land at your forecast, which also provides a comparison in terms of the number of jobs. What does that look like?
Well, in this forecast graph, the blue bars show you the growth that we've seen by industry over the last decade, and the yellow bars show you the growth that we expect by industry over the coming 5 years. And, first and foremost, let's be clear. The growth that we expect is way better than what we've seen over the last decade. Right? There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic from this figure. I mean, almost all of the blue bars look bad because the economy has suffered so much, and all of the yellow bars are going in the positive direction. We really do see this dramatic turnaround after the suffering that we experienced. But in general, we expect natural resources and mining to be the most rapidly growing sector going forward, with the bounce back in coal, to some extent that we've seen, and with the continued growth in gas that we forecast over the coming years, natural resources and mining is going to be the fastest growing sector. Construction is going to follow up as a second most rapidly growing sector. Actually, a lot of the construction boom is going to be associated with natural gas, a lot of the heavy and industrial construction that comes along with the gas industry. But there will also be a pickup in single family home construction over time in the state. You will note a big turnaround in manufacturing, right? I'm talking about industrial diversification. Manufacturing is very important to the state over time. You see big losses in manufacturing employment over the last decade, and that goes back even further. That's a national trend. But we do expect a turnaround there. We expect the manufacturing losses have ended. We expect growth in that very important sector over time going forward. The forecast certainly looks optimistic, but it could be even faster. I'm not showing a U.S. comparison on that figure. We are probably going to lag the U.S., at least in terms of the total job growth. So it could be better, so we still should maintain that sense of urgency. We should still focus on those fundamentals of diversification, promoting a more small business oriented economic environment and policy environment, focusing on improving those human capital outcomes. We still have so much to focus on, but we do have a lot of reasons for optimism.
So your thoughts on all this data, what is this telling us?
Well, like I say, it tells us their key principles are, it tells us for one thing, think positive, right? It tells us that we finally turned that corner year after year after year. We finally turned that corner. So we have lots of reasons to think positive, but at the same time, it tells us we can't just celebrate, right? We can't just be finished with it and celebrate. We still have to make these positive changes to really capitalize on the momentum and keep it going and accelerate it even further. But we have to think realistically. We realize we have these major challenges in front of us. A state with a labor force participation rate of 53%, it's a long way from where we want to be. So we have to think realistically. We have to think about overcoming some of these challenges that remain. We have to think about human capital. We have to think about people. We have to think about those education, health, drug abuse. There's nothing ahead of us that's more important than that. Nothing that I can think of that's more important in terms of developing our economy over the long run that's more important than education, health, and drug abuse. I think about good government in terms of where West Virginia's where we're going. I think about we have to make sure that our policies are oriented towards making our state more attractive to potential businesses. I would, recommend kind of just having the mindset, if I were a legislator, I would have the mindset of going in every day thinking about, will this policy make our state more or less attractive to potential businesses? That's not the only consideration. There's a lot of other things to weigh, but that's a very important consideration. And I would also think about, just making sure that we have responsibilities allocated appropriately between the state government and the local governments. And if we ever were to devolve more responsibility to the local governments, I would want to make sure that they're modernized and that they're set up to be efficient and effective. That's always something that we should push for, strive for. I don't know. I have a lot of things that I could talk about. Am I in the right area for you here?
Yeah, I think it's all really interesting. Uh-huh. Can you just share your final thoughts on just about what we know and how we proceed? Like, where do we go from here?
Well, we have the mindset constantly of what can we do to make the state more attractive to potential businesses, because we have to attract more businesses, more jobs. We have to have employers competing for jobs, driving up wages. That's the environment that we have to have if we're ever going to get West Virginia to a level of income that's on par with the national figure. So it's all about jobs and making our state attractive and conducive to those. So diversification, human capital, entrepreneurship, that's really kind of the bottom line. Those are the guiding principles behind developing our state.
So lots of economic diversification, education initiatives, pretty much everything. It's a very complicated subject for sure.
Well, it's complicated and it's hard to do. I mean, it's a long-term process, right? I mean, we're not going to fix this labor force participation problem overnight. It's been with us for decades. It's going to take a long time to fix, but we really have to be focused on the long-term and thinking about investment for the long-term, not just 1 or 2 years out, but long-term.
Dr. John Deskins, Director of the Bureau of Business and Economic Research, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
As we wrap up this evening, remember, you can watch your lawmakers live here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Coverage of tomorrow's floor sessions from both the House and Senate is scheduled to begin at 11 o'clock in the morning on the West Virginia Channel. For the Legislature Today, I'm Andrea Lanham. Thanks for watching and have a good night.